AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago, east of the Houston, Texas area. Heavy rain and tornadoes with damage to homes, vehicles, and power lines left behind. CBS's Janet Chamley in reports from Deer Park, Texas.
Sirens warned of the approaching storm as residents were urged to take shelter. Strong winds flipped over trucks and flooded streets in other parts of the Houston area. Emergency officials were out in full force to rescue people from the fast-rising water.
People here are assessing the damage. They are cleaning up. They're removing debris from the road. And while the tornado threat is moving out of the Lone Star State, it continues overnight for several other states.
In Yakima, Washington, police say a man walked into a Circle K convenience store early this morning and shot and killed three people. They say the suspect took off, later called his mother, and made incriminating statements before taking his own life. A suspect is expected to be arraigned tomorrow in the shooting deaths of seven co-workers at two locations in Half Moon Bay, California. CBS's Carter Evans.
The shootings began Monday afternoon at Mountain Mushroom Farm. Authorities say four people were killed and a fifth critically injured. A second farm just 5 miles away, three more bodies were found.
Hands up.
2 hours after the rampage, deputies found Zhao in his car parked outside a sheriff's substation. He was pulled to the ground and arrested. Investigators say a semi-automatic handgun was found in the car.
California is still reeling from a Saturday night attack in Monterey Park just outside of Los Angeles that killed 11 during a Lunar New Year celebration. The suspect was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound, and authorities are still looking for a motive in that shooting. An attorney for former Vice President Mike Pence says the FBI last week collected what appear to be classified papers from Pence's home in Indiana. CBS's Stephen Portnoy reports.
In an interview with CBS News after the Biden papers story first broke, Mike Pence insisted he had no classified papers at his home that his staff had checked.
I remain confident that that was done in a thorough and careful way.
But 6 days after that interview, papers with classified markings were indeed found in a search that a Pence attorney now says was done out of an abundance of caution.
New Zealand has a new prime minister, reporter Scott Mayman.
Holding back tears, Jacinda Ardern bid farewell to New Zealanders, thanking them for their kindness and empathy. Now she's looking forward to family life. She's now handed over the reins to Chris Hipkins, but Ardern advised him to just be himself now that he's been officially sworn in as New Zealand's 41st prime minister.
Stocks closed mixed on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Police say they can't explain why it was such an unusually violent weekend in Milwaukee. 18 people were shot between Friday and yesterday morning. Two teenagers died. At least one of the shootings was a triple shooting. Mayor Cavalier Johnson is calling on neighborhood leaders to help calm the violence. Wisconsin lawmakers are thinking of using some of the state's nearly $7 billion budget surplus to help communities with PFAS in their water, known as forever chemicals. One idea is to bolster a program aimed at helping low- and middle-class homeowners with contaminated private wells. In sports, the Bucks beat Detroit last night 150-130. The Badgers lost to Northwestern 66-63. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Max Inc. Radio, we are local music with Pete from the Skin Tones.
Here, you have been warned. Not only Madison, the rest of Wisconsin and the U.S., Skin Tones, we're coming at you. We're going to be committing rock atrocities. We're fit. We're in shape. We are tight. We are muscular. We are attractive for our ages. And we are sexy as hell.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday nights, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Devil's Advocates.
Hey, Jenny.
It's up to all of us. It's not just up to Democrats. Are we ready to rid our country of this perversion and deception? You know, are we sick of massacres at churches, grocery stores, theaters, concerts? Are we sick of adults forcing children who are raped into pregnancy? When is enough enough that we're going to vote all those fascists?
I'm putting you down for Caller Hall of Fame today. We have to carry these messages, even if the Democratic Party is incapable. You keep it up, sister.
Follow The Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
Focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today at major airports across the country, American Airlines flight attendants, represented by the Association of Professional Flight Attendants Union, they held an informational picket, taking their fight for a decent contract, decent wages, hours, conditions, directly to the flying public. And I think these are important. Explain to the customers, the people who fund these airlines, what their conditions are, what they put up with, you know, how many hours they're being forced to work. You know, what I'm told, a lot of sympathy here. But I've told contract negotiations entering what is known as a critical phase, and this hopefully going to get the attention of management. You see people out on the terminals, you know, riling people up, might get them back to the bargaining table and help these flight attendants get better wages, hours, conditions, and, well, the respect that they deserve, equal to their professionalism, commitment, and quality. And here to share some thoughts on today's events and what they hope to come out of this, I've asked Paul Hartshorn to come talk with us. He's the National Communications Chair with the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, APFA. Paul, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me. Also a flight attendant here as well.
Okay, good. So then you know firsthand what I'm about to ask you, because let's start even before the informational pickets and all this. How does anyone want to be a flight attendant coming out of the pandemic with all of the horrible that we're seeing in the flying public? I mean, your people deserve double whatever they're getting, let alone the pittance you're asking for.
Yeah, you know, thank you. And not just American Airlines flight attendants, but flight attendants and airline workers, I will include, okay, gate agents, everybody across the industry have been abused in more ways than one over the past couple of years. Look, with any industry, I think you'll see a lot of the restaurant industry, a lot of industries suffered through the pandemic, but our flight attendants were still coming to work. We were at first told, hey, you know, I don't think you need masks, not a big deal, but we need you to come to work. We need to get these doctors to the global hotspots. We need to get this medicine over here, you know, thank you so much for what you're doing and everything. And it took a tremendous, tremendous toll on our flight attendants, not to mention the fact that the disruptive passengers trying to enforce the mask policy, everything that I probably don't need to tell you because you lived it if you picked up a newspaper or if you went online. And just basically turn on any news channel. So it has been a tough, tough road for our flight attendants. This critical phase that we're entering now, our contract became amendable in 2019. Obviously, under the Railway Labor Act, contracts don't expire. They become amendable, right, as we all know. It's been four long years, and we have not had a raise, have not had improvements to work rules since 2019. Productivity has increased greatly, and it's time for this management, it's time for all airline management to come to the table and give these flight attendants, give us what we deserve.
No, what you earn, not deserve, what you earn. Yeah.
Thank you.
This is one of those things that, you know, it's not deserved. No, no, you earned this. You showed up during the pandemic. We called you frontline heroes. We called you essential. How about treatment as such?
We would love it. We would love it. You know, it was some dark times. It was some dark times. We lost not only the people that stayed flying, but we had thousands, almost 8,000 at American Airlines alone, furloughed and laid off. People had to leave a job that they loved because they were afraid of getting sick. We offered some early retirement packages, people that did not want to leave. It really, really is kind of a sad story in the airline industry. Again, not just the flight attendants. It extended to all airline employees and other industries across the country. But it's been tough, and we're ready, and we're ready for what we earned.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Today, you are out in the on the streets there in cities across the country, Charlotte, Washington, Dallas, New York, you know, Boston, L.A., the big airports. Yeah. How'd the events, Philadelphia, how'd the event go?
It was awesome. We have 11 flight attendant bases stretching from Boston to Miami to San Francisco, LA, all over the country. And it was an amazing turnout. This is actually our second action item that we've done. We did a first picketing on November 15th, which was unbelievably attended by our flight attendants. We not only had American Airlines flight attendants there, we have had United Airlines flight attendants crowding our picket lines. We've had Southwest, we've had ground staff there. It has been kind of just a coming together of all airline industry employees, ground and air, to get this done. You know, if you look at all the airlines across the country, a lot of them, pilots, flight attendants, ground workers, are in negotiations, and this has got to stop being dragged out.
Now, the fact that you brought up, you haven't, your flight attendants have not seen a raise since 2019. You think about all of the inflation that's happened because of the pandemic and our broken supply chains and all of that. Wages, you know, 2019 wages, not keeping up with 2023 spending.
Not keeping up with 2023 spending. And as I probably mentioned to you during the break, look, we American Airlines is back to flying the block hours that it flew pre-pandemic. You saw how quickly last June that travel demand just came back literally overnight. It was crazy. They're doing it with 3,000 to 3,500 less flight attendants. So we're packing more trips on those flights. People are exhausted. People are tired. It's not the customer service environment that you want to enter when you pass through the aircraft door. So we got to get this done. We got to keep the hiring going. We got to improve these work rules. Our flight attendants, really, we're asking for pay. We're asking for work rule improvements. But what we need is some work-life balance. Exhausted.
No, that's an important thing there, and I want people to understand what you just said. You're back to what pre-pandemic flights are, all the hours in the air, all of the flights in the air, but with 3,000 less people than you had before. So you have to have the people who are dedicated and still there covering all those additional positions, because you can't just go, hey, nobody showed up, we don't have flight attendants today. That's not how this game works. So you're underpaid. You're extremely overworked, and the treatment of the flight attendants, even in the flights that I've been, have been abysmal. This sounds like a hat trick of horrible in trying to get anybody to come there. So why isn't American going, no, we're going to throw money at the people who are staying here just to get them to stay?
It's really unbelievable. Look, and also when you're throwing all these extra flights on people's schedules, this is why you're seeing some of these meltdowns. American has had its fair share over the past couple of years during the pandemic. When you're scheduling your pilots and flight attendants to almost the maximum FAA, Federal Aviation Regulations, that are allowed, there's not much room for error when you pull into Dallas and there's a thunderstorm and you've got to wait an hour at the gate. All of a sudden you have crews going illegal. It's not just the exhaustion of the flight attendants and what we've earned. It's also affecting the traveling public too. Mm. So we need to kind of get this right. We need to fix it. We need to make sure we get people in there. We need to come up with contractual work rules that give these flight attendants some relief.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're Pete Hartshorn. He is the National Communications Chair for the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, APFA.org, their website. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Today, they had an informational picket at airports across the country, representing some of their 25,000 flight attendants across the nation. You brought up, you know, the airlines and the staffing problems and all of this. Is there nothing that you know, Pete Buttigieg and, you know, that segment should be doing? I mean, fining these airlines. I mean, we had a major outage that shut the entire country down. We've had, you know, flights canceled and people left, you know, basically, you know, flightless. And yet we're not getting the kind of regulatory enforcement that I would think these companies should have to be punished with for not doing what is right, not bringing in enough people, not paying adequate wages to bring people in. Because, look, I know people who want to be flight attendants. They just don't want to work for poverty wages and be overworked and mistreated like the stories we're hearing. So it seems like maybe some enforcement from Mayor Pete. Thoughts?
Some enforcement from Mayor Pete's. I'm not smart enough to comment on the software issues and everything of these antiquated systems that a lot of the airlines are using. I don't think it's just one airline that we won't name from last month. I think it's a lot of them. So that's really not my area of expertise. What I will say, though, is they need to look at the productivity. They need to look at what they're making these flight attendants fly. I won't also speak about the pilots. I'll let them speak for themselves, but I know they're in the same boat, right? They keep cramming things into these trips, making these trips longer, making us be out there for 14-hour duty days on paper when you can't go much past that for 3 days in a row. It's the recipe for disaster, not only for the exhaustion and the customer service aspect, but the issue when there's a thunderstorm in one of our hubs that has almost 1,000 flights a day, Dallas or Charlotte. I mean, come on, you can't operate like that. You need to have some give in the system.
And you need some reserves. You need people who are going to be there in case you run out of hours. Look, as a truck driver, I understand hours of service. I understand when you hit that clock, there's nothing you can do. So you need to have a couple of extra people. You can't be working on the margin. So let me ask you this. You know, as you've done now two of these informational pickets, does this at some point down the road become an actual picket? Do you guys eventually, is that something on the table? And then the follow-up to that, you know, what we saw with the railroad workers, you guys are covered under the Railway Labor Act. Does the federal government step in and not allow you to strike?
Very good questions. Very, very good questions. First off, this is our second, what we call informational system-wide picket. We've had tremendous support from the public. I'll not even name all the unions that came out to support us, but the public alone has been tremendously supportive because they've been through this. Every airline has had their breakdowns the past couple of years, right? Enough is enough. So they see it, they know it, they know that we're worked to our max duty days because that's what they are told by the agents when the flight cancels. So yeah, so that's an issue. Number two, yes, we are governed under the Railway Labor Act, and that's another show. That's something that we could probably discuss with people, again, much smarter than I, but it is very restrictive on what unions can and can't do in this day and age. Let's face it, we have these mega carriers, and who knows who's allowed to go on strike when? We won't know until we get there. We are going to continue with our action items that we're doing now, look for more picketing, look for more action items. You can always check out our website. We'll have them on there for anyone who is interested. But yeah, coming up, the next step in our negotiations, if American doesn't come to the table in the next few weeks, like we'd like them to, we're looking at getting a federal contact to the National Mediation Board, and you'll get a federal mediator assigned to you, right? Try to help the process along. Go down that road. Again, it comes down to accepting after that an offer of binding arbitration. If any of the parties reject it, you go into a 30-day cooling off period. And I think we all know from there what happens after that. We don't want to go down that road. Our flight attendants don't deserve to go down that road. They've been through hell and back already. Let's get this done. American knows they need to get it done. Let's get it done.
No, I'm right there with you. So what can we do to help? What can folks do to kind of push management in a direction? I mean, the fact that you haven't seen a raise since 2019 and you're doing all of this extra work, it seems to me like the CEOs and the management negotiating folks would want to have a lucrative package to entice people to come in and alleviate some of these problems. But again, what makes sense doesn't make sense in corporate boardrooms. So I'm curious, how can we help?
The passengers, like I said, have been tremendously, tremendously supportive out there supporting us on our picket line and all 11 flight attendant bases there. We got some great footage of it. We have news out there everywhere. Everyone has been tremendously supportive to us. Our regular customers that we see entering the airport, when we're out there picketing, when we're out there leafleting, we're walking through the airports, passing out, leafleting, things of that nature. More of that's going to come up. But I will say this isn't just about the compensation for our flight attendants. It's about the scheduling flexibility. You know, they're like I hate to go back to it, but they're building these trips and flight attendants are away for 1, 2, 3 more days. These flight attendants have kids. They have sick parents. They have a husband who's possibly dealing with cancer. They got a lot going on and they're stuck out on these trips and they're just cramming stuff in. And when you cram stuff in, they can't swap their trips around. There's no flexibility. They're stuck on it. So there's so many things that we can fix that we've cut. You know, we're not just coming to the table saying, This is what we want. American fixes. We're coming with ideas. We're coming with constructive ideas to help the flight attendants and obviously not stick the company, you know, not screw them. But we need them to get this done. They know exactly what they need to do. We need to wrap it up and go forward. But I will say once again, we are tremendously appreciative of all the unions. I want to name them all. I have a list of them today, and I don't want to name them because I'll probably miss some. But they were out there for us today. Passengers were out there for us today. Cookies, you name it. It was great, and we're really appreciative of it.
Oh, good stuff. Paul, I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on what's going on here. We want what's best for our flight attendants. We want them to get what they've earned and reward their professionalism and the quality of their work. It's that simple. But I appreciate your time.
Appreciate your time. Hope to see you in a flight soon.
Good stuff. Paul Hartshorn, National Communications Chair at the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, APFA.org, the website. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Back after this. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
It's one of the things that gets me. You know, the reality is, you know, we hear a lot of people say, well, we deserve something. No, these workers, they earn it. They deserve it, yeah, but they earn it. These are people who we called heroes, remember? They're frontline heroes. These are folks that we said were essential. And they showed up. And the fact that, you know, as Paul points out, the fact that they're back to pre-pandemic levels of flights, the number of hours in the sky these planes are actually up, and the number of people who are servicing the flying public, you know, well down, that means they're working, you know, many more shifts. They're, as he pointed out, away from home more often. Lots of not good. If you're a worker there, do you stay? If you're working harder than you did 4 years ago, making the same money you made 4 years ago, but working extra hours, working extra flights, doing all of the things that you have to put up with now, the flying public? Seriously? Couldn't get me there. Couldn't get me there at all. And this is why, again, I keep coming back to, you know, the reality is this is why people... This is why people sit down and bargain. This is why workers need to come together and say, look, we're going to demand better wages, hours, conditions. We're not asking. We're not begging. We're not putting our hand out. We're going to demand we get here. We're going to demand that we're treated with respect and dignity. We're going to demand it. Maybe it's where we need to be. Simple as far as I'm concerned. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Jerry on line one. Jerry, how are we doing today?
Hi there, Rick.
What's on your mind?
I'm in Arizona, and I love your radio station and your pro-union stance.
Thank you.
Two things. One is my ex-husband's father was president of the state electrical board in a state I won't mention, but it was back in the 70s before I divorced him in 73, and I remember them saying, one of them darkies came in today, and we sure didn't have an opening for an apprenticeship. which is racism. But anyway, why don't you do more research on whenever they pass statutes, more research on the Republican arguments of how they would dare allow companies to have tax deductions to send jobs overseas. See, every time a statute is passed, they record the arguments made on both sides, so you can blame the Republicans and who started that. Because I'll never forget driving down the road in my van, because I was a house painter, hearing that the Congress allowed tax deductions for these companies to dare send jobs overseas.
Yep.
And even the workers, and make it tax deductible.
No, if you remember 2012.
Research more the wording in the statute books of who argued pro sending jobs overseas.
Well, we know who did that. A lot of Republicans and some corporate Democrats.
Read the wording of who the congressperson was that argued it.
Yep.
I mean, it should have been criminal, but it was allowed. It was put on the books, and it was approved by Congress. But the wording of who started it and who... I mean, that was the most shocking thing in the world to me, was when I heard it's tax deductible. We can send our, you know, and Mitt Romney and his companies and all that, but it's in the book somewhere. It needs to be researched, in my opinion.
We'll take a look for
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Rick. Keep up the good work. You're the best. Go unions.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. No, look, she's not wrong. I mean, we should look up and find out who brought this. But we know what policymakers brought us this. There were a number of corporate Democrats and the Republican establishment. This is neoliberal supply side voodoo Reaganomics on steroids. And that whole thing of tax breaks. If you remember 2012, Mitt Romney said, remember when he said, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I have never. And yet it's right there in black and white that the companies that he shipped overseas through Bain Capital took massive cuts, got massive deductions. We paid for our manufacturing base to be moved overseas. And now, sadly, and this is where my frustration is, we're paying for it to come back. So this is a, you know, heads they win, tails we lose kind of scenario. It's angering. It's frustrating. But again, I think she's right. We do need to go back and say, you know, this is how it came about. Because most of us have taken it for granted that this is just how it's been. And it's not. This was a conscious choice by elected leaders. This was a conscious choice that was lobbied for by corporate America to enrich, to do what? Enrich them at your expense, at my expense. Yeah, you go back to, you know, what we talked about with Scott Paul earlier. The fact that our manufacturing base has been so hollowed out. Our military is less secure, our nation less secure because of it. Where did that money go? You know, who's going to be this generation's Teddy, Harry Truman? Who's going to be this generation's Teddy Roosevelt? Who's going to break up these big monopolies? Who's going to hold these people accountable? Again, you know, take off the red hats, take off the blue hats, put on a hard hat, and let's rebuild this country together. Let's hold these people accountable, because they knew what they were doing. Understand, our tax code works exactly as it's supposed to. Our trade policies work exactly as they were intended. All of these things that we complain about, all of these things that have destroyed a prosperous working class, all these things that harm families, all these things that are literally killing us are working perfectly as designed. They're enriching the handfuls at the very top, heaping wild amounts of wealth and power on them at the expense of, well, you and me. And yet we still fight over the nonsense. We still fight over, I keep going back to, you know, gay marriage, abortion, all of the divisive stuff that doesn't affect the average individual. You against gay marriage? Don't do it. You against abortion? Don't do it. You don't want to go to a drag show? Don't. It's that simple. But when you're talking about economy, that should be working for everyone. When you talk about national security and a military base that's being built here, when you talk about the things that make us really strong, they don't want to have anything to do with it because they know which side of the bread their butter's on. Amazing stuff. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. As severe weather causes damage east of Houston, Texas, and moves east, the country's midsection sees snow. And as CBS's David Parkinson explains,
we mean the potential for at least a half a foot of snow in several cities, including St. Louis, Indianapolis, Detroit, and then on up into northern New England.
Police say it looks like it was a workplace violence incident at two mushroom farms in Half Moon Bay, California, where seven people were killed yesterday. Congresswoman Anna Escher
evidently had some kind of row with co-workers, and they believe that he specifically targeted those that he killed.
The suspect is expected to be arraigned tomorrow. The hands of the doomsday clock are moved forward 90 seconds to midnight, largely due to the war in Ukraine. Rachel Bronson with the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists.
The moving of the clock closer to midnight moves us into a period that requires newfound vigilance and focus from leaders and citizens alike.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matner with your headlines. Democrats want to give voters the chance to voice their opinion on Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban, introducing a joint resolution Monday, which has little chance of passing the Republican-led legislature to get on the April ballot. Republicans blocked a similar non-binding referendum last week, but did pass their two measures. Now the April ballot will contain questions about cash bail and work requirements for some benefits. Health officials say Wisconsin's abortion ban makes the state unwelcoming to young families and healthcare professionals. A call to ban the use of hounds for hunting in the Shequamagon Nicolet National Forest after Wisconsin's controversial wolf hunt 2 years ago. A petition was submitted last week by the Center for Biological Diversity and Friends of Wisconsin Wolf and Wildlife to bar the use of dogs to hunt black bears and other wildlife. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
What are the governor's priorities for Wisconsin? Tony Evers will lay out his second-term plans during his State of the State address January 24th. You can hear it live on your local Civic Media radio station. Will abortion rights, Medicaid expansion, and legalizing marijuana be the top issues? Your favorite hosts also provide insight by breaking down the governor's address. The State of the State address live Tuesday, January 24th at 7 p.m. here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Training. This is Jim Hightower saying, guess what? NRA then uses these worker training fees to fund its lobbying efforts that let restaurants pay poverty wages. And that, kids, is how inequality happens.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we talked about yesterday on the program, if you remember our Working Class Heroes radio tour, we were in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and met up with the guys who were on strike at Ingredion. And, you know, again, it's another one of these situations. And it's amazing to me that you get to these moments where a profitable company could easily meet the demands that the workers are asking, because their demands were not anywhere near outrageous. They were just basic, hey, we need to keep up with the cost of living. Hey, we'd like to have a life outside of work. And the companies, no. And this comes down to, and it's amazing to me, but it comes down to not what the companies are able to share with their workers. It's what they're willing to share. And it's all about power. It's all about control. It's all about, hey, more for me. So when these workers stood up and said, well, we're going to withhold our labor, we're going on strike, the community supported them, other unions supported them, and now we have victory. And that's why I've asked Jason Davis to come talk with us. Jason is an international representative with the BCTGM. They represent those Ingredion workers in Cedar Rapids. Jason, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
So walk me through this. I mean, this is, what, almost 6 months these guys and women were on strike?
It was August 1st last year. We went out on strike. Our contract expired when we ratified our contract this past Sunday. It was 175 days on strike. So yeah, it was a long, hard fought battle, and you know, in the end, just like you said, you know, the workers, I think, here can claim victory without a doubt. You know, the offer that we voted on and that the members ratified on Sunday is a far cry from where we were on August 1st. You know, we went, you know, to improve wages. We were able to keep all of our bargaining unit jobs. I don't know how much you were at the beginning of the strike, but the company's initial proposals, they initiated proposals to take away our lab jobs and to take away our maintenance jobs. We kept both lab jobs and maintenance jobs in this contract. When we talked, I think it's just last week or maybe the week before, you know, there's proposals still on the table to take vacation time away from these employees. And outside of any employee moving to a 12-hour shift, vacation remains unchanged. So we kept all of our vacation rights. We kept the system in place the way it was. We were able to make some gains on our overtime assignments, make some gains for disability, short-term disability, long-term disability, make some good gains for PPE items, you know, work boots, bibs, things like that. So, you know, in the end, you can always, it's hard to say that anybody wins through a strike, but these members, they fought out there, and it was not for in vain. You know, we ended up with a contract that was far better than where we were on August 1st.
And this is the part you hit on, something that's really, you don't know who wins and loses in this. But what I do know is ultimately the company could have solved this problem from day one. It's you guys, from what I remember, we're not asking for the sun and the moon and you know, things that were outrageous. You were asking for you know, just basic decency and a bit of the profits that your labor creates. This was more about power and control, in my view, than it was about survivability or even profitability.
Absolutely, Rick. You know, it's about it's hard to say at this point because we've ratified this contract, but you know, it was about takeaways. You know, and this, just like you've made mention, just like we mentioned a couple weeks ago, this company is running record profits currently. You know, they could have settled this contract at any point. Obviously with the members ratifying the contract on Sunday, we're elated to be going back to work, and we're excited for the opportunity to show the company exactly why we are the workforce that we are, why we earn our benefits and our pay. Our members are just ready. They're ready to make starch again.
No, good for them. So the question that I have in this is, because they did bring scabs into the plant, you know, are they going to keep those scabs, replace any of your members? You know, what's the scenario going to happen there as they go back? Because, you know, Iowa, as everyone knows, is a no rights at work state. And good on your members. You know, as I understand, you had nobody, as I understand, crossed the picket line, or very Correct. Few, if any, did. Most of these people they brought in were scabs from elsewhere. What happens with them?
That's correct. I mean, they'll be going back to where they are. With this deal, every single member that walked out on August 1st, and I give credit to Mike Moore, president of Local 100G. He made the mantra when we walked out on strike, everybody goes out as one and everybody goes back as one. The deal that we struck, every member that wants to return to work at Ingredion will have an opportunity to return to work at Ingredion. You know, obviously, I think right now in our economic state, that's part of what gives workers so much leverage, is workers have had the opportunity that, even though we're going through the strike, they were able to seek other employment. They were able to seek other jobs. And there's going to be a number of members that enjoyed the other job more than where they're at here.
Yeah.
And probably stay with their other jobs. And you know, the unfortunate part about it is, and we remain steady at the bargaining table with this, Rick, is that they're going to lose probably hundreds of years of experience.
And that's the part that amazes me. That's the part that makes me go, you know, if you're really in this to make the best product, if you're really in this to serve your customers in the best way, why would you risk your best long-term dedicated loyal employees going somewhere else? Because as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of the product that's going out is coming back because it hasn't in the past through this strike met the standards that these employees were putting out prior. Am I getting that right?
That's exactly our understanding. Is there was most of the product that was made did not fit spec. So what they did to meet customer needs, obviously we don't know at this point. But we know for certain out of this facility, they weren't getting product to make spec. And not just that they weren't getting product to make spec, we're assured by the amount of corn that came in and product that went out, they weren't even running full production at this facility through this strike. So, you know, what they did to get by during the 6 months, you know, it's, I guess that's here or there, but, yeah. You know, exactly it. You know, I can tell you from experience, when we were on this same local was on strike in 04. And I hear stories of them taking 3 to 4 years to rework bad starch through the system to get it to spec for their customers.
Wow.
I would anticipate that we're going to have a good bit of that going too, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm a shareholder, I got to be honest, if I'm a shareholder in this company or any of the ones recently that have gone on strike, because again, I'm looking at the people who have been on strike and your union has been very aggressive in fighting for good contracts, but not obscene, not outrageous demands, just, you know, hey, this is what we've produced. This is the profit we've produced. We'd like some of it. If I'm a shareholder, I'm looking at these CEOs and the people who are making these decisions going, maybe it's time for you to go because you don't seem to get labor management relations. You don't seem to get where the positives of having a stable workforce come from, and that is having a good product.
Well, that's it. The quality of the product they put out and just how much these workers care. You know, we have generational workers within this plant. When I say that, I mean, we have mothers and sons, or you know, fathers and sons. We have a grandmother and her grandson works down there, and you know, he's contemplating whether to come back. He found him a job at a good union job at UPS, and he's contemplating, do I come back or do I stick with UPS at this point? It's a real question he's got to ask.
And the thing is that's not unusual. You know, we were on the picket line there in Cedar Rapids with the Ingredion folks, and I believe I met her. We were also at the Case New Holland strike picket lines in Burlington, Iowa, where the same thing. There was a woman there, her son and her grandson both worked at that plant. This is a kind of a family industry. And I don't know why you would risk that kind of loyalty for pennies. I mean, it's really what we're talking about. When you're looking at the grand scheme of how profitable these companies are, it's really pennies. So for me, it's, and maybe you'll disagree with me, it's not really about the money. It's about the control. Because in each of these places, it was about, you know, overtime. It was about work rules. It was about making people work 14, 12-hour days straight or some craziness like that. So it's not even really about money so much as it is about power.
I think you're absolutely right, Rick. You know, and the majority of these strikes that came out, it's just like you said, we don't have outrageous demands. You know, in a lot of cases, we fought just to keep what we had and keep what we have. You know, we weren't coming out with outrageous demands. But, you know, you think about right now in this economy and what the workers went through in 2020 with COVID. You know, all of our workers with the BCTGM work in manufacturing jobs, they were forced to come to work.
Yeah.
Through the pandemic, they came to work and did their job admirably. and turned record profits for these companies. And now they want their now they want a fair shake of that. You know, meanwhile, the people in the front office, the people at the corporate office, you know, they had the option and the luxury of being able to work from home. You know, when our members came to work, they're putting their lives at risk. They're putting their families' lives at risk due to the pandemic. You know, it's I think that's kind of disheartening. But I think that's what's led a lot of our folks, yeah, and a lot of our members to and a lot of union members around this country. You know, quite frankly, I've been at this for a little bit, and it is very inspiring to me, Rick, to see workers finally realizing just how much power they have.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, this is one of the things I wanted to finish up with you, Jason. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Jason Davis. He's international representative with the BCTGM. You want to check out their website, bctgm.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. But, you know, for years, you know, we've had concessionary contracts in a lot of these industries where workers were constantly having things clawed back from them. And I think management, CEOs got used to, hey, we can continually just taking and taking and taking, you know, suppressing wages, taking benefits, shifting benefits. You know, we'll give you a little bit of raise, but we're going to take healthcare money away. They've gotten used to that. And now in this moment coming out of the pandemic, and you're absolutely right, workers are starting to feel that power going, you know, enough of this already. So I do expect this kind of a trend to continue into the near future. My fear here, and this is where maybe you'll have a thought, is we look at what the Federal Reserve's doing, we look what Republicans in Congress are doing. It's like they're trying to have a recession, like they're trying to create economic chaos so that, well, they can blame you for, hey, well, it's your fault. You demanded too much wages.
Well, I think kind of isn't that the Republican model? You defund them, you break it, and then you bitch that it's broken. Or you complain that it's broken. I'm sorry. Sorry for the listeners. And you complain that it's broken, you know. Yeah, you can look at that. That businesses, the chambers, Republicans have been after unions for the last 40 years. We are the last bastion standing in their way of complete control.
Yep.
You know, and they want it all. Just like you said, a lot of these companies, they just want it all. I mean, we do have good companies out there that we deal with, but these companies, as a general thumb, yeah, they're looking for it all. And you know, it's just not right. You know, I often say that it should be criminal what a lot of these companies do.
It should be criminal. Absolutely. The fact that you see these reports coming out. In fact, you know, just the other day, OSHA came out and said, you know, Amazon did all these things, and you know, the NLRB comes out and says Starbucks does all these things, and they're all violations of the law, and yet nobody's going to jail. I say we start locking some of these criminals up. Maybe things will change. And this is where it comes back to the politics of the day. We need good, strong, workers-friendly legislation. We need major comprehensive labor law reform in this country.
And we need to, as union members, we really need to focus on our elections and who we elect into these offices to get what we want. You know, it's a long time coming. We have to get people into office that are going to support workers, that are going to realize the value of workers in this country. Without the workers in this country, it grinds to a halt quickly.
We learned that quickly. Last bit I got for you. Any words for those workers at Ingredion? Anything you want to say?
I just want to say thank you. And I, you know, I've told them all, you know, I couldn't have been any prouder to stand and serve with them for 175 days. For those workers at Ingredion and every worker across the country that's taken your company on to fight for what you deserve, it inspires. It inspires us. You know, I do this as a full-time job in representing workers around the country, primarily through the Midwest, and it inspires me. It truly does inspire me. And keep it up. Realize your value. You guys have the leverage. Workers have the leverage. We have the power right now, and we must take all that we can take while we have that power.
And any workers who are out there who aren't members of unions, who don't have the kind of backing that these workers had, the kind of solidarity in the workplace, the fight for better wages, hours, conditions, any message for them?
Absolutely. I mean, there's power and strength in a union. You know, your employer may tell you this is a union, some third party coming in, but the union is you. The boss can do without any one of you. But when the boss has to do without all 125, like they did in Cedar Rapids for 6 months, it changes the story completely. You have the power right now. If you come together, you collectively bargain, you organize, the possibilities are endless. The possibilities are endless.
And if you want to check out their website, bctgm.org, we'll get links out on social media. Jason, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Congrats on the big win, and I wish you guys the best going forward.
Rick, thank you so much for your support through this and helping getting our message out. We truly appreciate it, and thank you to everybody else that's helped us out through this fight.
Good stuff. Jason Davis, international representative, is BCTGM, bctgm.org, the website, if you want to check out that there. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1950. The minimum wage in the United States was raised to 75 cents an hour. This move nearly doubled the minimum wage from the previous 40 cents an hour. More than 22 million people were directly eligible for the wage increase. In his statement on the change, President Harry S. Truman declared, "It is a measure dictated by social justice. It adds to our economic strength. It is founded on the belief that full human dignity requires at least a minimum level of economic sufficiency and security." If the minimum wage had kept pace with inflation since 1950, it would now be over $10 an hour. The last time the federal government raised the minimum wage was 2009. It currently stands at a meager $7.25 an hour. Given the overwhelming Republican control of Congress and the enormous cash outlays by corporate lobbyist groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Restaurant Association, and others, it's doubtful that Congress will take up the question of raising the minimum wage anytime soon. Yet, next year, 21 states will raise their minimum wage. More than 3 million people will see a raise because of the state's measures. In four states, Alaska, Arkansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota, voters passed ballot measures to raise the minimum wage. In total, 29 states in the District of Columbia will have a higher minimum wage than the federal level. Washington State will have the highest state minimum wage at $9.47 per hour. Yet most states still lag well behind inflation. If the minimum wage is a measure dictated by social justice, where do we as a nation measure up? And what of Truman's call for human dignity? To date, only two presidents have failed to raise the minimum wage since its inception: Republican Ronald Reagan and Democrat Barack Obama. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Look, you know, we've been talking about these striking workers, and like, there are strikes going on across the country where it's almost the same model. And the frame that's been thrown out by the right-wing message machine, the anti-labor message machine, is these greedy workers, they just want more. And their insatiable appetite for more never ends. They want more health care. They want more retirement. They want more vacation. They just want more. They're greedy. They're greedy, those workers are. And you go, hold on. What are you talking about? You got CEOs who are making tens of millions of dollars a year telling someone who's actually doing the work of producing the product and have dedicated their time and basically their lives to this pursuit, saying, no, a quarter an hour, 50 cents an hour. Wow, too much. Sorry, an extra $2,000-$4,000 a year. That's just, that's greed that we cannot allow. Let that sink in for a minute. The messaging that we're sold when workers say, hey, you know what? We want better wages. We want better conditions. We want better benefits. We want health security for ourselves and our families. Because look, this has been going on for years. And sadly, our laws are so broken. The pendulum of power has swung well to the side of corporations. And what you have is a media empire, a media echo chamber that beats up on these workers anytime they go on strike. Because they're being greedy. If they don't like it, this is my favorite one. My favorite one. If they don't like it, they should go somewhere else. And you go, but understand the business roundtable. Understand, you know, big corporations kind of collude around the idea that we're not going to have a wage race, which is why these non-compete agreements sprung up all over the place, which is why a fast food restaurant has a non-compete that they want their employees to believe applies to them. Because, you know, making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, that's proprietary. It's all in how you use the knife and slide the peanut butter on the bread. That's special. We taught you that. You can't take that across the street. And why? Because they don't want you going across the street chasing nickels. They don't want you going and saying, hey, I can get a better wage over here and them having to pay you more to keep you. No, no, that's not how it works. We like to believe it is. We like to believe that there's competition and workers can go in individually and negotiate their own good deal. We love to believe that. Problem is, it's not reality for the vast majority of working people in this country. So when they come together and they say, you know what, we demand better treatment. Our media culture says, well, look at these greedy workers. How dare they? How dare they? They could go somewhere else. Well, the problem is there's nowhere else to go. This is where this moment, the leverage is now swung a little bit, not a lot, a little bit onto the side of working people. The economy's a little tight. Everyone's, all of the media people are crying and complaining. Nobody wants to work anymore. They're all lazy. Nobody wants to work. Now, understand, this is a frame that's been going, 100 years plus. Anytime workers are going, no, we're not going to work for poverty wages and desperate conditions. No, we're going to not put our lives on the line so that you can make more off of our backs. No, anytime that happens, they pull out the, nobody wants to work anymore. It's not true. People want to work. People just don't want to work for poverty wages. People don't want to work and make somebody who's the hardest job they do all day is moving money from one pocket to the other. From yours to theirs. But we keep hearing that frame. Our unions are only about the bosses. They're greedy. They want more. Keep buying that. Because it's going to get us right where we've gotten over the last 40 years. Concessionary contract after concessionary contract. Workers afraid to go on strike. And now we've got a Supreme Court who's going to try and put that in the law. By ensuring that corporate America, when they do lose money, because understand, these companies, no matter how they cook the books, the product that they're sending out the door is garbage most of the time. When they bring these scabs in who don't know what they're doing, there's a huge learning curve. And those products are terrible. Now, here's the interesting part of what the Supreme Court wants to do. And this is where, again, we're seeing a rise in the number of workers saying we've had enough. We're going to withhold our labor. We're going on strike. Supreme Court's going to come in, and I already think it's been decided, but they're going to come in and they're going to say, well, you know, you cost the company money. They can sue you for it. And then you're going to see, concessionary offers out the wazoo, because the pendulum will have swung even further in the side of the corporations. I've had people go, but, you know, Rick, you know, most small businesses, they can't afford this. I'm not talking about small businesses. Ingredion is not a small business. Case New Holland is not a small business. John Deere, definitely not small. UPS, if a strike comes this summer, most certainly not a small business. Your small mom and pops in town should want strong labor unions. They should want people who have discretionary funding in their pocket. You know why? So they can come into a small business and keep them afloat. I've had people, well, you know, you can't unionize two people. No, you can't. You got to have at least three. So this is one of those moments where, you know, again, they keep trying to confuse with what we're talking. We're talking about ensuring that workers, one, have rights, share in the wealth that their labor creates, dignity, respect on the job, safety, a future, and this idea that we work so that we have the ability to pay for our living, that we work to live, instead of what corporate America seems to want us to do, which is to live to work. The question is where are you? Where? And this is where I want to hear thoughts. And you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com, and tell me what you think on where we're heading into the future. Will we see more strikes? Will we see more workers feeling their oats, so to speak, and being willing to stand up and say, you know what, we've given enough over these 40 years. They've clawed back enough. Because I'm old enough to remember when overtime after 8 hours was the norm. Think about that. They've completely changed what was the norm on healthcare, on retirement security, on wages. How much more are they going to take? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.